will you please call the case?
Case number 30049, Corboy v. Bennett. Arguing for the appellants, Bill Burgess. Arguing for the appellees, Gerard Lau. Also appearing for the appellees, Charlene Ina. Argument on the merits.
Mr. Burgess.
Acting Chief Justice Nakayama, and to the court, aloha and good morning. If it pleases the court, I'll refer to my clients as taxpayers and refer to the state and the Attorney General in his official capacity and the counties collectively as the state. Taxpayers are five homeowners and municipal taxpayers and beneficiaries of Hawaii's federally created Ceded Lands Trust, who seek from their respective counties equal protection, privileges, and immunities under federal constitutional and civil rights laws and under basic trust principles applicable to federally created trusts. Taxpayers filed these eight consolidated cases in the state tax appeal court following the roadmap that was laid out by the U.S. Supreme Court in California versus Grace Brethren Church, where the court said state courts, like federal courts, have a constitutional obligation to safeguard personal liberties and to uphold federal law. These taxpayers claim that each of the four counties of the state of Hawaii, by exempting Hawaiian homestead lessees from most real property taxes, but denying an equivalent exemption to these taxpayers and to all other homeowners similarly situated, deprives them of equal protection, privileges, and immunities under federal law. The relief that they seek is a refund of the taxes that each of them paid under protest for the years in question, a declaration or a conclusion that the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act itself, as well as all of its provisions, including the exemption from real property taxes, we seek a declaration that that is unconstitutional, and we also ask for a permanent injunction against to the counties against any further deprivation of plaintiffs or of taxpayers and persons similarly situated.
Could you explain the last statement you made, Mr. Burgess? What do you mean by deprivation? Deprivation of what?
The tax exemption is a privilege or an immunity because it gives the right not to pay real property taxes, or it gives immunity to paying taxes. So it is the being deprived of that exemption, that privilege or immunity, that is the problem.
And when you're asking the court to declare the HHCA and the Constitution or the, I guess, these other documents or provisions as being invalid, you're speaking precisely about the provision relating to tax exemption, or are you speaking generally?
The declaratory portion, or either a declaratory judgment or at least a legal conclusion in your decision that you're asking, we're suggesting that it should conclude or declare that the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act itself in its entirety is unconstitutional, as well as the exemption is unconstitutional. And
the state says the tax court doesn't have jurisdiction of that question because the tax court is only concerned with the tax exemption. So what's your position?
Well, that used to be the rule in the state tax court, but it's not now because the statute specifically gives tax appeal courts the right to decide all questions relevant to tax appeals, including questions of constitutionality. And the injunctive relief is directed against the counties, and it's not directed against the state or anyone else. It's against the counties, telling them and all persons, of course, acting in concert with them from depriving in the future anyone, either plaintiffs or anyone else, of that equivalent exemption to what's given to homestead lessees.
Mr. Burgess, the state argues that because contends that the taxpayers have not established that they want to become Hawaiian homestead lessees themselves, and that as a result they have they lack standing to challenge either the act in its entirety or the tax provisions. Could you respond to that argument, please?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. The state has been making that statement that to the effect that the taxpayers have indicated they do not want a tax, so they have to become lessees, or they have no desire to become lessees, or they have affirmatively said they don't wish to become Hawaiian homestead lessees. That's not quite correct. We said, that is, the taxpayers here have said that they have not applied for a homestead lease. And before this case was filed, the Barrett-Carroll case was decided by the district court, the local Hawaii district court, U.S. district court. And the decision in that case, Patrick Barrett had applied for a homestead lease, but in his deposition he said, no, I don't challenge any federal laws. And the court, the district court, which was affirmed by the Ninth Circuit, said that he's applied, but he hasn't sued the United States or made the United States a party, and therefore his complaint is dismissed for lack of redressability. That happened before our eight suits were filed, and none of the taxpayers applied for a lease. The court, the district court, in that Barrett-Carroll case said that when it comes to a question of constitutional constitutional equal protection, the injury is not being deprived of the benefit, but it's the injury is being deprived of the ability to compete on an equal footing for the benefit. And the court said it would be I think the language was to the effect that it would be disgraceful or something like that to say that simply because a person didn't apply for a lease, to say that he can't now challenge the injury to himself caused by not being able to compete. So that's the position. Now, we have not affirmatively said that we don't want a homestead lease. I think it's beyond dispute that if the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act with all of its enormous benefits, were opened up to everyone, that either the taxpayers or hundreds, maybe thousands of people similarly situated would obviously and certainly apply for the benefit.
But Mr. Burgess, if you're attacking the entire act, HHCA, wouldn't the United States have to be a party to this suit?
No, Your Honor, it's not necessary that the United States be a party. It is necessary that United States Attorney General be notified of the claim whenever the constitutionality of a federal statute is an issue. They have to be notified, and the United States has a right to intervene. We did that in each of the eight cases. We sent a notice of constitutional question to both the state of Hawaii, to the state attorney general, and to the United States Attorney General. The state did appear, Mr. Bennett appeared as a party by agreement, by stipulation, and the state itself intervened by stipulation as a party to some of these eight cases. So there is no requirement that, in fact, that's one of the things that Grace Brethren, California versus Grace Brethren Church said, is that the United States is not a necessary party to every suit in which the constitutionality of a federal statute is in question.
But in the Ninth Circuit in that Carroll case, was that not their holding, that the United States was required to be joined as a party, and as a result, the plaintiff's claims couldn't go forward? And obviously, we're not bound by the Ninth Circuit's determination, but we can look at it for its persuasive value. So,
which case was that?
The Carroll versus Nakatani case.
Oh, yeah. The court did say that the United States was a necessary party to that case because Barrett had applied for a homestead lease, and because he did not challenge the constitutionality of any federal law or bring the United States in as a party, Judge Ezra said that, since under the law, the qualification for a homestead lease can't be changed without the consent of the United States, I can't redress your grievance. And that's not the situation here. We specifically do challenge the constitutionality of the federal statute, the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act, and we did properly send notice to the United States.
Is it sufficient to send notice, or does the United States need to be joined as a party, in your view?
I have never seen any requirement that the United States be a party. In fact, Grace Brethren, I believe, says specifically that it's not necessary to join the United States. The arguments in that case said that were to the effect that, we can't go to the state court because the state courts don't have any jurisdiction to sue the United States on that type of matter. But the response to that was, no, it's not necessary to have the United States as a party to bring a challenge to the constitutionality of the federal statute.
Mr. Burgess, the state does concede that you do have standing, taxpayer standing, isn't that correct?
I think so, and certainly the Tax Appeal Court,
footnote 9 of their brief says that they concede you have general taxpayer standing. You recall that?
I'm sorry, I didn't.
Assuming that you have taxpayer standing,
right?
Then the state argues that the test that they would have to apply to the HHCA is a rational basis test in terms of the exemption. Mm-hmm. So they argue that you have not responded to their rational basis arguments. Therefore, in effect, you've waived any argument against a rational basis argument. Is that correct?
No, we have not waived a right to respond to that. We have said, and we think it's undeniable, that the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act and the exemption specifically, the wording of the exemption specifically, imposes a racial classification. And the test for any use of a racial classification by any government, federal, state, or local, is strict scrutiny. And so that has been our position. It defies, I think, the position or the idea of giving an exemption to a group of people, not based on need or not based on any kind of a merit, but simply because of the happenstance of their ancestry.
Can you point
it defies, there is no logical basis for that. Sorry.
Can you point to the language in the HHCA on which you base your argument that there is a racial classification? What words in the HHCA indicate to you that there is a racial classification with respect to the tax exemption?
With respect to the tax exemption?
Yes.
The wording of the four tax exemptions, although each county did their own separately, are remarkably similar, and that indicates probably the fact that in 1978 at the CONCON, as a result of that, the real property tax was turned over to the counties.
Did the ordinances passed by the counties establish a racial classification?
I believe it does, Your Honor. I have the wording of every one, but they don't use the word race, although the definitions that they use does. But here's the language for the from the revised ordinances of Honolulu. Under the heading of other exemptions to real property taxes as set forth in, and then there's some others, but the pertinent one is in section 208 of the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act, which were enacted prior to November 7th of 1978, shall remain in effect and be recognized and implemented by the city in its administration of the real property taxes.
And are the other ordinances similarly worded?
Yes, not exactly, but very similar.
So what in the HHCA, what language in the HHCA establishes a racial classification with respect to exemptions?
It's the definition of the beneficiaries. And the beneficiaries are any descendant of not less than one half part of the blood of the races inhabiting the Hawaiian Islands previous to 1778. And that definition describes the beneficiaries and the purpose and effect of the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act is to benefit only that explicitly racial class. Then the exemptions.
Mr. Burgess, how does the fact that there are people of Hawaiian ancestry who do not own Hawaiian homestead lands affect your argument that strict scrutiny should apply?
That's a very good question, Justice Nakayama. There are no Native Hawaiians who are among the disadvantaged class. And Native Hawaiians, I'm referring to the definition which I just said, the 50% or more Hawaiian blood. They are not disadvantaged by the act or the exemption, because any descendant of not less than one half part has the right and is eligible to compete for award of a homestead lease. And, you know, as I indicated before, it's the ability to compete that's the important part of it. It's not the actual receipt. The Hawaiian Homes Commission doesn't have the resources to award leases to everybody. But the fact that the limited number that it awards every year doesn't include everyone of Native Hawaiian ancestry is a neutral classification. So that's the reason for that. Okay. Now, incidentally, on the relief sought, I want to make it clear that my clients do not seek to displace any homesteaders from their homesteads. Actually, in fact, my clients have family relationships with homesteaders, and they have no desire to do that. They do believe, in fact, that the best thing for everybody, including all of the 8,200 or 8,300 homesteaders now, would be to somehow enable them to acquire the fee simple interest and just to end the whole program. It would be better for them and better for all of us. And it would be our intent, if we prevail in this case, we would attempt to at least begin a negotiation process to accomplish what could be truly a global settlement of not only the Hawaiian Homes problems, but the problems caused by OHA. But that's not for this case. I think it's appropriate for this court to decide this case, because the issues raised here are among the most important of our time for everybody who calls Hawaii their home, except for the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act enacted by Congress in 1921 and then imposed on the state in 1959.
Have you ever argued, Mr. Burgess, the grounds against the HHCA being able to demonstrate, or at least that there are reasons why strict scrutiny would apply, and that HHCA would not meet the strict scrutiny standard? Did you ever argue that?
Whenever an allegation of racial discrimination is present, the burden is on the governmental entity, the state or the county or the United States even, to show that it passes strict scrutiny. The state has never claimed or never shown that this explicitly racial definition is in any way passes strict scrutiny. There has to be, to pass strict scrutiny, there has to be a compelling governmental interest in using the invidious discrimination, and then it has to be narrowly tailored to accomplish that. And the Hawaii Constitution itself negates any possibility that the state of Hawaii, of all states, has a compelling interest in discriminating between its citizens on the basis of race. There's numerous provisions of the Hawaii Constitution which disavow any such thing. There's the provision that prohibits the use of special interests with regard to the public lands of Hawaii. That's what this is. It's a special privilege, not of general application. It's prohibited by the Hawaii Constitution. Indeed, it's the discrimination in this case, in the case of the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act and the exemption, it not only violates the basic provisions of the U.S. Constitution, but it's contrary to the tradition, the long tradition of inclusion in Hawaii, going back to the very beginning when Kamehameha the Great brought non-natives into his family and onto his forces, and with their help united the islands and all of its people, native and non-native alike. And then there's a long progression since then. That was 1810 when he united the islands. There's a long progression of laws, for example, the 1840 Constitution of the Kingdom that began with the classic words, God hath made of one blood all nations of men to dwell on the earth in unity and blessedness.
Burgess, one thing that the state argues is that nearly 70% of the lessees have incomes below 80% of the county median. So would that constitute one basis for for different treatment in terms of a compelling state interest?
Well, I don't think that there's any evidence of that in the record. There was probably a statement, or may have been a report or a study or someone who said that, but that doesn't reach the level of evidence. But that and all of the other
Was that argued below?
Was it argued
before the trial court?
No. No, not by either side. I don't think there was any effort or any claim that somehow the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act was a compelling state interest. Incidentally, I see there's an orange light. Does that mean I have 3 minutes?
3 minutes.
Remaining of the entire time?
Correct.
Oh, okay. May I reserve that time?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Your Honors. Gerard Loud, Deputy Attorney General for the state and its Attorney General. I've been authorized by the counties to argue the case on behalf of all the parties as defendants. The Tax Appeal Court properly granted summary judgment to the state and counties, rejecting taxpayers' attack on a tax exemption that has been in place for the last 90 years. Let me address the equal protection claim, along with the federal civil rights claim, which are the only claims actually asserted in the taxpayer's complaint. The first task in evaluating an equal protection challenge for these property tax exemptions for homesteaders is to figure out what is the classification and determine whether it involves a suspect classification. If it does not, then one applies the rational basis test under which the classification must be upheld if there's any conceivable rational basis for the classification. Our motion for summary judgment demonstrated three different bases including the alienation restrictions, the testamentary restrictions, as well as the lower financial income of the average homesteader. Taxpayers did not dispute any of these bases, and as a result, the equal protection claim must be rejected. Now,
so just to clarify, you did argue in the trial court this differential between lessee's incomes and...
Absolutely. We put it. We submitted evidence to that effect, and Mr. Burgess never refuted that. The classification here is very obvious on its face. It is whether one is a homesteader under the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act or is not a homesteader under that act. Nothing more, nothing less. Those with the homestead those who are homesteaders receive the exemption. Those who are not do not get the exemption. That classification on its face does not involve a suspect classification. The classification does not involve whether one is Native Hawaiian or not. Indeed, most Native Hawaiians do not receive the exemption because they are not homesteaders either. Taxpayers are no worse off than the vast majority of Native Hawaiian homeowners who also do not receive the tax exemption because they are not homesteaders. Now, taxpayers rely heavily on the fact that only Native Hawaiians can become homesteaders, but that misses the critical issue in this case, which is to decide what is the disfavored class. In this case, it's very clear that the disfavored class is not those who are not Native Hawaiian. Rather, that this disfavored class in this case is those who are not homesteaders, many of whom are not Native Hawaiian. Thus, no suspect classification is involved in the rational basis test applies. And the U.S. Supreme Court in Gadaldig versus Aiello confirmed this analysis when it held that the exclusion of pregnancy from a disability insurance program did not affect a gender-based discrimination warranting heightened scrutiny, even though only women can get pregnant. The court stated, and I quote, "While it is true that only women can become pregnant, it does not follow that every legislative classification concerning pregnancy is a sex-based classification. Absent showing that distinctions involving pregnancy are mere pretexts designed to affect an invidious discrimination against members of one sex or the other, lawmakers are constitutionally free to include or exclude pregnancy from the coverage of legislation such as this on any reasonable basis."
Mr. Lau, has that case ever been applied to a distinction based on racial grounds as opposed to gender grounds, and has it been applied in any recent time by the U.S. Supreme Court?
I don't have a particular case that does that, but the logic of the case would apply by analogy, such that Gadaldig, when analogized to that situation, would essentially mean in this case that while it is true that only Native Hawaiians can become homesteaders, it does not follow that every legislative classification concerning homesteaders is a race-based classification. There is no showing that the taxation distinctions involving homesteaders are mere pretexts designed to affect an invidious discrimination against members of one race or the other. And therefore, under the logic of Gadaldig, lawmakers are free, constitutionally free, to include or exclude homesteaders on any reasonable basis. Now, taxpayers...
Mr. Lau,
yes.
Looking at the HHCA, Section 208, Subsection 1 says, "The lessee shall be a Native Hawaiian." And looking at Subsection 7, provided, however, that the lessee shall be exempt from all taxes for the first 5 years from date of lease. So looking at those two provisions of the HHCA, isn't that a racial classification?
Not at all. Even if one were to assume there were a racial classification in the decision to apply or to allow homesteads to be awarded only to Native Hawaiians, that does not mean there's a racial classification with regard to the tax exemption. And that's because
Which exemption are they talking about?
The tax exemption for homesteaders.
The lessee shall be exempt from all taxes.
Right. So that's
the first 5 years.
Yes, and so that's the exemption for homesteaders. And so the people who are being benefited by this tax exemption.
This is lessee in the act.
Correct. The lessee.
This is lessee shall be a Native Hawaiian.
Correct.
So reading those two things together, is that a racial classification?
No, and the reason it's not is because the people who are getting the tax exemption are not the category of Native Hawaiians. Most Native Hawaiians do not receive this tax exemption because they are not Hawaiian homesteaders. It's only the Hawaiian homesteader who gets an exemption. Those who are not Hawaiian homesteaders, which include non-Native Hawaiians as well as most Native Hawaiians, do not get that exemption.
So what about Mr. Burgess's argument that it's the ability to compete for the benefit, this should be the critical inquiry. What's your response to that?
Again, under the Gadaldig theory, the point here is that the category that is disfavored here are those who are not homesteaders. Most Native Hawaiians also do not get this benefit. If they own a regular home, like most of them do, they also do not receive the tax exemption either. And so they are equally unable to compete for the exemption because they don't want a homestead, and they're not in, or even if they do, they don't have one. And so they, like all the rest of the non-Hawaiians who don't have homesteads, are also not able to receive the tax exemption. So as a group, the disfavored class here are the people who are not homesteaders.
But in Geduldig, women did receive significant benefits under the program, which was something that court emphasized, that there's this one particular benefit which women didn't, or I guess pregnant women didn't benefit from, but the program as a whole represented, had substantial opportunities for women to get coverage for insurance. Is that a distinction? Is there a distinction between that case and the situation here?
No, because, I mean, again, there are many tax exemptions on the books, and non-Hawaiians as well as everybody else are able to compete for all of those exemptions as well. And this particular exemption is specifically designed to make the homestead program functional and work. And so it's not an exemption that's designed to aid Native Hawaiians in particular. It's an exemption to help the whole program be effective and functioning.
Wasn't that the argument you're making rejected in Rice v. Cayetano?
Absolutely not. And the Rice.
Well, let me just read from that, and you tell me, maybe you put it in context. Simply because a class defined by ancestry does not include all members of the race does not suffice to make the classification race neutral. Here, the state's argument is undermined by its expressed racial purpose and by its actual effects. Don't we get, when we look through HHCA and the Admission Act, all, and through our own Constitution, all these statements indicating that this is really for the rehabilitation of Native Hawaiians, it's specifically aimed at Native Hawaiians, and so the purpose is aimed at a specific racial class, or race, or racial class, isn't it?
Yeah, let me address that. In the Rice versus Cayetano, that quote that you gave basically said that, you know, if a class defined by ancestry doesn't include all the members, that's not sufficient to make it survive. In the Rice case, there was actually a class defined by ancestry because the people who were allowed to vote in OHA elections was the group consisting of all Hawaiians. In this case, we don't have that classification here. We're making a distinction based on who is a homesteader and who is not a homesteader, not who is Native Hawaiian or not.
Yeah, the court also went on to say that the state's argument is undermined by its expressed racial purpose and by its actual effects. And we get through all of these documents, statements that this is for rehabilitation of the Native Hawaiian, this is a continuation of the program for Native Hawaiians, etc. So if that's the purpose, doesn't that sustain the proposition that there is a racial classification?
And my answer is no, and the reason is that just even if we assume that there was a racial purpose for the homesteading program as a whole, that is to give homesteads to Native Hawaiians, that is not evidence that the tax exemption in particular was offered for a racial purpose, as opposed to for any of the non-racial purposes that we submitted below, including the alienation restrictions and their financial, at below average financial condition. In fact, because Native Hawaiians who are not homestead lessees do not receive the tax exemption, that is further evidence that the exemption for homesteaders was not for a racial purpose, but rather for non-racial purposes, including making the homestead program work. Indeed, the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act contains lots of history reflecting the economic distress and economic inability of the beneficiaries to successfully farm on the lands. Thus, the financial assistance, including the, excuse me.
So if you concede that there is at least taxpayer standing, the petitioners or plaintiffs, have taxpayer standing, then the only question is whether there's a racial classification, and assuming there is a racial classification, whether or not there are grounds which would support strict scrutiny. Would that be fair to say?
Right. Of course, our whole point is that there is not a racial classification, that the proper test here is the rational basis test. I mean, that is the essence of our argument. If for some reason this court were to conclude that somehow there is some facial racial classification, which we vigorously deny, then, you know, the state would want to go back and argue the Morton versus Moncari defense But again, we don't have to reach that more difficult issue because it's our position that in this case there is no racial classification. The distinctions here are made between homesteaders and non-homesteaders, not between Native Hawaiians and non-Native Hawaiians.
Mr. Lau, you, the state, as I understand it, also had an alternative argument that the plaintiffs lacked standing to challenge the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act as a whole and this particular tax exemption because they don't seek to become lessees. Could you explain how that argument fits into the discussion we've been having?
Yes. I mean, our first point is that the classification here is not racial, and what they try to do is try to make it racial by saying, well, only Hawaiians can become homesteaders. But, I mean, that argument was rejected in Gadaldig. But even if you go beyond Gadaldig, they don't even have standing to raise the argument that, well, this classification is racial because I can't become a homesteader because I'm not Hawaiian. In fact, these plaintiffs have specifically disclaimed any interest in becoming a homesteader. And I can quote to you exactly where they say that, contrary to Mr. Burgess's representation. This is not about whether or not they applied or not. We have never argued that because they didn't apply that they have no standing. Our position is that they don't actually want a homestead. They have no desire to even have a homestead. They said on their own opposition memo at pages 7 and 9, none of the five appellants in these eight consolidated cases asked for an award of a homestead lease. And they admitted on page 9 that they are people who do not seek a homestead lease. So in this case, they have no business even arguing about the qualifications for becoming a homesteader because they don't even want a homesteader. So they have no standing to even raise the argument to try and convert a clearly non-racial classification into a racial one by bringing in the qualifications for a homestead, because these people don't want a homestead. And the proper portion of the Carroll case that they should be citing is on page 1229, where the court said, this court has already held that submission of an application is not necessary, but what is required is that the plaintiff show that he is able and ready to compete for the benefit sought. He must show that he really wants a lease, or to put it another way, that he has a personal and genuine interest in obtaining a lease. Mr. Burgess's clients have admitted that they don't want a lease. What they really want is to keep their regular non-homestead homes and still get the same exemption that homesteaders do.
Well, if he attacks HHCA as a whole, then the United States would have to be a party to this case.
I believe that is true. There are Ninth Circuit cases, the Arakaki versus Lingo case, that specifically say that the United States needs to be a party when you make a challenge to the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act qualifications.
So he really has only standing to raise the taxpayer arguments.
Yeah, I mean, he may have standing to basically argue that this exemption, which only goes to homesteaders and not to non-homesteaders, there may be standing there. But what I'm saying here, but that argument again raises the classification homesteader versus non-homesteader, which is a non-racial classification warranting rational basis treatment. What I'm saying here is he doesn't have the ability to try and convert that into a racial classification by saying, well, but the only way to become a homesteader is to be Native Hawaiian, when in fact these people don't want to become homesteaders. So they have no basis and no standing to try and raise that particular argument to try and convert this into
his complaint asks for an equivalent exemption.
Right.
So if there's an equivalent, all he's asking for is an equivalent exemption, then the United States does not have to be a party to this suit.
Well, that would essentially be changing the qualifications under the Act.
We wouldn't change the HHCA at all. Well, all it would do would be to extend the same exemption to everybody who's not a lessee.
Yes.
And would the United States be interested in that? Doesn't affect the HHCA. The exemption remains in effect for Native Hawaiians. But now he's asking that the exemption be extended to everyone else.
I suppose the United States might not be interested in that aspect, whether if the counties wanted to extend it. That may be true. Again, that is not our principal argument that we've made in this case at all.
I think in terms of standing, in that situation, which is what his complaint asked for,
the
United States does not have to be a party to this suit.
Right. Our standing argument is a very different one that goes to the notion that, again, you have this classification that is on its face not a racial one. And what we're saying is that he can't try to make it look like a racial one by saying, well, the only people that can become homesteaders are Native Hawaiians, when in fact they don't want to become a homesteader. That's our standing.
Just so we're clear, Mr. Lau, there are two very different arguments. One is contention they don't want to become homesteaders, and another argument is that the United States is not a party to this litigation, So right. there can't be completely relief granted because any
right.
outcome here would necessarily invalidate either directly or by inference the HHCA, and therefore these plaintiffs don't have standing because they didn't join the United States as a party. Now, is that latter argument an argument that you rely on in this case or not? That's an argument that has been used in the Ninth Circuit.
Right. That is not an argument that we made in the briefs in this case.
Okay. So it's not an argument that you're relying on here?
Well, we wouldn't waive the argument if this court felt that was an argument that would be a grounds for denying relief to the plaintiffs, then obviously we would take that. But that's not the principal argument we've made in this case. And I want to get back again to the notion that the legislative history behind the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act does confirm that the purpose behind the tax exemption was not racial, but rather to make the program successful and work. The history explains that there were restrictions on alienation that were necessary because under prior homestead laws, the inability of Native Hawaiians to financially make it work precluded their abilities to farm the land, and therefore a lot of them ended up ultimately selling the property rather than working the land. Because the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act, on the other hand, substantially prohibits such selling, it essentially forces the homesteaders to try and make the property productive. And as a consequence, there is a concomitant need for financial assistance to make the farming viable. Thus, the tax exemption, like the other financial assistance provided under the Act, simply helps make the Hawaiian homestead program more likely to succeed. That is not a racial purpose at all. We submitted unrefuted evidence below that homesteaders even today have below average household income and continue to face severe alienation restrictions. And in sum, because the evidence in history suggests no racial purpose for the exemption, but rather a desire to financially aid beneficiaries because of the widespread economic difficulties and alienation restrictions, and that as a result, the overall purpose of the tax exemption is to provide financial assistance so that the program will be more likely to be successful. That is not a racial purpose.
Does the tax exemption in excess of 7 years, is that in any way affected by the Hawaii Homes Commission Act?
No, the Act requires the tax exemption to last for 7 years. It doesn't say anything what happens after that. In this case, the counties have chosen to extend, or most of the counties have chosen to extend the tax exemption beyond the 7 years. That's their prerogative. Mr. Burgess makes an argument that somehow the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act prohibits the extension beyond 7 years because it says that the homesteaders are liable for any taxes assessed.
But so assuming there would be any appeal through the federal chain on any aspect of this case, the tax exemption in excess of the 7 years would not be affected.
Right. There's no
federal claim.
That's right. There's no serious federal argument that somehow the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act bars the tax exemption beyond 7 years. It simply says taxpayers are liable for whatever taxes they are assessed. The counties have chosen not to assess taxes on them even beyond the 7 years.
So you're only really addressing the 7 year provision.
Well, our argument basically says that their tax exemption forever is, there's no basis for finding it unconstitutional or it to having violated any federal laws. So we are addressing everything. It's just that the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act mandates the exemption for the first 7 years, but nothing in the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act bars extending the exemption beyond 7 years. The counties have chosen not to extend it beyond the 7 years.
Except that
to extend it.
Except that the ordinance incorporate by reference the Hawaii Homes Commission Act.
Yes.
So then they would be affected.
Except that some of those ordinances specifically say the 7 year limitation notwithstanding.
Those ordinances actually, but they adopt the definition of the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act in terms of who does and doesn't get the benefit of the exemption?
Well, they give the exemption to those who are lessees under the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act. So by definition, those who are homestead lessees under the Act necessarily are those who qualify under the Hawaiian Homestead Act.
So the determination that those definitions were in some way improper, even for the period greater than 7 years, would have an impact then on the Act itself, on the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act itself?
No, it wouldn't have an impact on the Act. The Act simply requires that they give the exemption for 7 years. But the counties giving the exemption beyond the 7 years has really no impact on the Act. That's, it helps further the ultimate goals of the Act, but it doesn't impact the Act in any sense of in the sense of like contradicting the Act or in any way.
The determination that they were racially discriminatory would presumably, for greater than 7 years, would presumably have an impact back on the act as being discriminatory for less than 7 years, if that were the decision.
Right, but because that's correct, but because there's no basis for concluding that the act was racially discriminatory for the first 7 years in granting this exemption, we think there's no basis for. At the same time, there would be no basis for concluding it was racially discriminatory beyond the 7 years. In fact, under the federal civil rights laws, Mr. Burgess makes federal civil rights claims, but of course, because there's no racial purpose in the exemption, the federal civil rights laws are not invalidated. But more importantly, or equally importantly, the fact that federal law actually mandates these tax exemptions under Section 20808, as mandated by Section 4 of the Federal Admission Act, which cannot be changed without congressional approval, because these specific tax exemptions are federally mandated, it's impossible for them to be deemed to be in violation of some other more general federal law. The case law is very clear that specific federal laws cannot violate more general federal laws like the federal civil rights laws.
The Rice decision makes reference to the depressing condition of the Native Hawaiian, and it uses similar language, I can't recall. And then the article, this is what, 11, in our own constitution talks about the HHCA being incorporated in the Constitution for the further rehabilitation of the Hawaiian people. So taking that into consideration, whatever those factors are, and your argument about the difference in income, would or could all that amount to compelling state interest?
That's certainly possible, that those requirements could support a compelling state interest requirement. But again, our key point here is that the compelling state interest test is simply not the applicable test here, because we do not have a suspect classification involved. And that's because the act here provides tax exemptions based on whether you're a homesteader or not, not based on whether you're Native Hawaiian or not.
Well, is it narrowly tailored as well? I mean, if it provides a compelling state interest, is it narrowly tailored? Could it survive strict scrutiny? Should we decide to apply that test?
Well, I mean, that would be a tougher question, whether or not the lack of income in general for the homesteaders would provide a narrow tailoring under that test. But again, our key point is that we don't have to get there. We're simply under the rational basis test, and so it's not necessary to establish that.
Mr. Burgess makes the argument that if you go on rational basis, that the case should actually go back to the trial court for it to adduce evidence as to rational basis.
Absolutely not, Your Honor, because under the rational basis test, the requirement is merely that any conceivable rational basis be found. You do not have to show under the rational basis test that a particular motive actually motivated the legislature. The rational basis test specifically allows, and many of this court's decisions have said, that any conceivable basis is enough to support a classification when you're under the rational basis test. In fact, though, there is actual evidence in the history of the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act that the purposes of the tax exemptions were essentially to provide the financial assistance needed to make the program work. And so, again, there is simply there is much rational basis for this tax exemption in terms of making the program work in recognition of the alienation restrictions and in recognition of the lower financial wherewithal of the beneficiaries. Mr. Burgess also raises a whole bunch of other claims, from a contracts claim, an equal footing claim, a breach of trust claim, that were really not presented in their complaint and really should not properly be here. But those claims in any event are without merit.
What is his privileges and immunities claim?
I think he's raising that essentially as some variation of the Equal Protection Clause. It's not really clearly articulated. And again, we would be under the rational basis test. And again, there's many conceivable rational bases which he did not refute.
Are the civil rights statutes claims clearly articulated?
No. But as I said before, they fail on two grounds. One, there's no racial element, which is a critical element to the civil rights claims, and there's no racial element because this exemption is based on whether you're a homesteader or not, not whether you're a Native Hawaiian or not. And it also can't violate these exemptions are federally mandated by federal law, and so case law is very clear that a specific federal law cannot be invalidated by general federal laws, including the civil rights laws. Now, he has also makes a Newlands Resolution claim that somehow the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act or Hawaii's adoption of it somehow violates the Newlands Resolution's command that the proceeds from the ceded lands be used solely for the benefit of the inhabitants for educational and other public purposes. But clearly, the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act is for the benefit of the inhabitants, as Native Hawaiians are certainly inhabitants, and it is also surely for a public purpose, namely the rehabilitation of the Native peoples. The tax exemption as well is a logical way of furthering the homestead program by making the homesteaders financially capable of being able to work the land and make a success of their homestead. In addition, the Newlands Resolution calls for Congress to enact special laws for the public lands management and disposition. The Hawaiian Homes Commission Act, including its tax exemption, is just such a special law providing for the special management and disposition of 200,000 acres set aside for homesteading. And finally, the non-homesteaders certainly benefit from the remaining ceded lands not set aside for homesteading pursuant to 5F of the Admission Act. 200,000 acres available for homesteads are only a small fraction of the total ceded lands, and thus it's absurd to suggest that non-homesteader inhabitants are precluded from sharing in the benefits of the ceded land revenue. Mr. Burgess also makes an equal footing claim that is faulty on many fronts. He makes the argument that somehow because Congress restricted these lands for homestead purposes, that somehow denies states inequality, denies them equal footing as being admitted as a state. In fact, the United States voluntarily gave the state these 200,000 acres of land, and it did not have to give those lands at all. And it surely cannot be a violation of the equal footing doctrine for the United States to give Hawaii title to homeland subject to certain conditions when the U.S. did not have to give it title at all. The Branson case out of Colorado Federal District Court specifically supports that argument, and even the Coyle case distinguishes cases where you have congressional restrictions on public lands, essentially upholding those kinds of restrictions. And the equal footing doctrine claimed that somehow Hawaii was treated unequally by imposing these restrictions on the lands it got is also particularly absurd when one remembers that the United States also gave Hawaii 1.2 million acres of other lands not limited to the Hawaiian homestead purposes. And that was essentially six times as much land as was provided to for homesteading purposes. Lastly, Mr. Burgess makes an argument that the U.S. Supreme Court case in Hawaii versus OHA somehow prohibits the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act or limits it in some way. That case merely said that retroactive clouding of state title could be a problem. In this case, we have no retroactive clouding of state title because the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act provided homesteads along with the exemption long before statehood and before the transfer of title from the federal government to the newly admitted state. In fact, the U.S. gave Hawaii title to the homestead land upon its admission on the condition that Hawaii adopt the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act, including its tax exemption. There's simply nothing retroactive about that at all, and the restriction on the new state was essentially a concurrent with the transfer of title. If taxpayers are instead arguing that the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act in 1921 retroactively clouded the titles to the title granted with the Newlands Resolution, that also fails for two reasons. The Hawaiian Homes Commission Act and its exemption followed, not clouded, the Newlands Resolution by benefiting inhabitants and serving a public purpose. Indeed, the Newlands Resolution called for Congress to adopt special laws governing the ceded lands, and the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act with its tax exemption is just such a special law. It does not cloud title, it implements the title. And finally, even if the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act were viewed as somehow clouding the original title, it would be the federal government clouding its own title, which is nothing like the federal government clouding a state's title, which was the concern expressed in the U.S. Supreme Court's Hawaii versus OHA case. So it would be a tragedy both to the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act and its beneficiaries to bar this tax exemption. The program's successes turn on the ability of homesteaders to financially sustain their homestead. Eliminating the exemption would do tremendous harm to the program's success and unfairly surprise homesteaders with an exemption that was unexpected. That is especially unwarranted when the federal government, the state government, and the county governments do not even want them to pay these taxes. Because the tax exemption is constitutional and does not violate any laws, we respectfully ask this court to affirm the Tax Appeal Court's judgment. If there's no further questions, thank you, Your Honor.
Please, the court. The Gadildug case that Mr. Lau mentioned was a case involving a California unemployment benefit statute. It gave, it deducted 1% of all private employees' pay up to a fairly modest amount, I think $1,200 or maybe that, to cover payments of lost income. And then that monthly amount was then paid if you had become unemployed because of various causes. One of the, because it was paid by the employees, not by the employers, there was a question of how much and what types of things wanted to be covered by the employees. And so the one of the things was that pregnancy, normal pregnancy, the court said it was it had a unique characteristic with unique reasons for it, was not to cover ordinary without any problems. But if there was a pregnancy that became complicated and involved risk to the potential mother, that was covered. But the decision that was made by the authorities was that we'll only cover certain things, and that will keep the costs down, and we don't have to cover everything, or we can cover everything. It's really, you know, what you want to do. The court said that that was a non-invidious consideration, and they decided not to do it, and they simply covered everything. Race wasn't involved in that case, and it wasn't a strict thing. There were women were included in the non-favored class and in the favored class. In fact, I think the evidence in the court was that actually the costs were greater for females than they were for the male employees because for some reason they had more. But anyway, the decision was that it doesn't require the type of strict scrutiny analysis that would be appropriate. Now, Mr. Lau argues that there's a federal mandate for this exemption. Well, there's also in the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act a mandate that for the rest of the term that the homesteader pay all of the taxes against the tract and the improvements. And yet the counties decided to disregard that. That's a deliberate decision, and it really can't be justified by for any reason other than to give more benefits to one particular class. This was 1978 or after the 78 CONCON. OHA had just come down with a great victory because they had been created by the 78 CONCON, and it was the beginning of the or part of the Hawaiian Renaissance. And it seems, one logical explanation for doing this, for the counties specifically going against the federal mandate, and really against the best interests of the counties by depriving them of one of their main sources of income, was not, it had no basis for it. I think my time is up. Thanks. Thank you,
Mr. Bridges. We'll take this matter under advisement.